So today, in addition to reading the Shemot Bhagavatam, it's the commemoration of the disappearance day of two great personalities, Udarana Datta Thakur and Mahesh Pandit. I'll just speak very briefly about each one, because we don't have much information. So Om Gana Simadanda Shah, Gananjana Shlakya Chakshura Meditam Gena Tasmai Shigurvay Maha. So Mahesh Pandit is a great associate of Lord Nityananda, and he was present during the Panihati festival that was held by Raghunath Das Goswami for Lord Nityananda. His birthplace is in Chakadaha. And see, when Narottam, just a few interesting things, when Narottama Das Thakur visited Kadadaha, that's his birthplace, he visited Mahesh Pandit and took darshan of his lotus feet. It's described in the Bhakti Ratnakara, he's a very exalted soul, a great Mahatma. And Vrindavan Das Thakur also refers to him as a great Mahatma. And he says, especially he was dear to Lord Nityananda. So he passed away on this day, which is the dark moon in the month, the 13th day of the dark moon in the month of Posha, which is today. And so as far as Udarana Datta Thakur, it's very interesting information about him. He's actually from the same family, it's a mercantile family, that Srila Prabhupada is from. It's from the Mulik family. And they're Suvarna Vanik. Suvarna Vanik means basically gold merchant. That means bankers and gold merchants. And they were all purified by the association with Lord Nityananda. Again, he is also an eternal associate of Lord Nityananda. And in Saptagram, where he appeared, there's a nice deity with six dharam form. It's the Sadbhuj deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Udarana Datta Thakur installed Gauranatai deities, which were later brought to the house of Zamindar. And let's see, Vrindavan Das Thakur writes about him. After Nityananda Prabhu stayed for many days in Kadadaha, he went to Saptagram. There is a famous god in Saptagram at the confluence of the three rivers, which is celebrated as being the place of the seven rishis, that's the Sapta rishis. At that ghat on the Ganges, the seven rishis had once performed penances in order to attain the lotus feet of Lord Govinda. So when Lord Nityananda went there, he bathed that holy place with all the devotees. Udarana Datta was staying in a temple of the Lord at the banks of that river. When Lord Nityananda came to the Triveni, when he saw Lord Nityananda, he offered his mind, body, and words to the holy feet of Lord Nityananda. And so there's some stories here. Practically everyone in Saptagram was a Vanik. The moonlight, the Nittai Chan, frolicked in kirtan within their midst. All the Vanaks, that means the gold merchants, took shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda and worshipped him with great ecstasy. Okay. After the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu's Shakti, Sri Janavamata, came to Saptagram and visited the house of Udarana Datta Thakur. At that time, Udarana Datta Thakur had already passed away. He passed away on the 13th day of the dark moon in the month of Posha, which is today. So we are remembering these two great personalities today. So now we'll go on to Srimad Bhagavatam. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th canto, 3rd chapter, text 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Atma Atma Japta Vriha Vita Janeshu. Satair. Dushprapanaya. Guna. Sangha. Vivarjitaya. Muktatma bhi. Swaradehe. Paribhavitaya. Janatmane. Bhagavate. Nama. Ishvaraya. Atma. Atmatma japta griha vitta janeshu shattair. Dushprapanaya guna sangha vivarjitaya. Muktatma bisvaridaye paribhavitaya. Yanatmane bhagavate nama ishvaraya. Atmatma japta griha vitta janeshu sattair. Dushprapanaya guna sangha vivarjitaya. Muktatma bisvaridaye paribhavitaya. Yanatmane bhagavate nama ishvaraya. Atmatma japta griha vitta janeshu sattair. Dushprapanaya guna sangha vivarjitaya. Muktatma bisvaridaye paribhavitaya. Yanatmane bhagavate nama ishvaraya. Okay.
Yeah. Sri Havita Janesu Saptar.
Adnanta Chattari Havita Janesu Saptar.
Duspra Panaya Gunasanga Vibhajitaya.
Duspra Panaya Gunasanga Vibhajitaya.
Mukha Pandi Swahidaye Parivavitaya.
Mukha Pandi Swahidaye Parivavitaya.
Jnanatmane Bhagavate Namaheshwaraya.
Jnanatmane Bhagavate Namaheshwaraya.
Okay. Atma.
Atma.
The mind and body.
The mind and body.
Atmaja.
Atmaja.
Sons and daughters.
Sons and daughters.
Apta.
Apta.
Friends and relatives.
Friends and relatives.
Riha. Home, community, society, and nation.
Home, community, society, and
nation.
Vita.
Vita. Wealth.
Wealth.
Janeshu.
Janeshu.
To various servants and assistants. Saktai. By those who were too attached.
By those who were too attached.
Dushprapanaya.
Dushprapanaya.
Unto you.
Unto you.
Who are very difficult to achieve.
Who are very difficult to achieve.
Gunasangha.
Gunasangha.
By the three modes of material nature.
By the three modes of material nature.
Vivarjitavitaya.
Vivarjitaya.
Who are not contaminated.
Mukta Atmabihi.
By persons who are already liberated. Swavidahi. Within the core of the heart. Paribhavataya.
Unto
you. Who are always meditated upon. Yana Atmane. The reservoir of all enlightenment. Bhagavate, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Namaha, I offer my respectful obeisances. Ishvaraya, unto the Supreme Controller. Translation. My Lord, those who are completely freed from material contamination always meditate upon you within the cores of their hearts. You are extremely difficult to attain for those like me who are too attached to mental concoction. Home, relatives, friends, money, servants, and assistants. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, uncontaminated by the modes of nature. You are the reservoir of all enlightenment, the Supreme Controller. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. You can repeat. My Lord.
My Lord.
Those are completely freed.
Those are completely freed.
From material contamination.
From material contamination.
Always meditate upon you.
Within the cores of their hearts.
You are extremely difficult to attain.
You are extremely difficult to attain.
For those like me.
Who are too attached to mental
concoction.
Too attached to mental concoction.
Home relatives, friends.
Home
money, servants, and assistants.
Money, servants, and assistants.
You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Uncontaminated by the modes of nature. You are the reservoir of all enlightenment.
The Supreme Controller.
I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki
jai.
Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes into the material world, He is unaffected by the modes of material nature. This is confirmed in His Upanishad, Apapavidam. He is not contaminated. The same fact is described here, Guna Sanda Vivarjitaya. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears as an incarnation within this material world, He is unaffected by the modes of material nature. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, the 9th chapter, text 11, Avajananti mam mudha manushim tanum ashvatam. Foolish men with insufficient knowledge deride the personality of Godhead because he appears just like a human being. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be understood only by the Muktatma, the liberated soul. Muktatmavi, Svogadaye, Paribhavataya. Only the liberated person can constantly think of Krishna. Such a person is the greatest of all yogis. Yogina api sarvesham madgaten anturatmana jatavan bhajate yoma same yuktatmo mataha. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. From the Bhagavad Gita, 6th chapter, text 47. Atma japta kriga vitta janeshu sattar dushprapanaya guna sanga vivarjitaya muktatma visvudaye paribhavitaya yanatmane bhagavatai nama ishvaraya. So, omagana timidandasha gananjana shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigarve Namaha. So what I'd like to talk about is what Prabhupada didn't deal too much with about this in the purport, but it's in the verse, as attachment to all these different things, mental concoction, home, relatives, friends, money, servants, and assistants. So these attachments, of course, we have to discover how to give them up. And of course, the Vedic system is based upon dovetailing some of these attachments and then ultimately understanding that maybe you have to give up the dovetailing at a certain point in life. That's called the Varnashram system, the system of the Brahmachari, Rahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. Those are called the ashrams. And of course you have the varnas, but we're not talking about the varnas today. The varnas are basically, varna means color, but it doesn't mean the color of one's skin. It actually means the type of occupation that you're attracted to. Whether you're attracted to just working with your hands, as a shudra, you know, artist work and things like that, or, you know, plumbing and things like that. There's nothing wrong with that. Or you're attracted to money, like the Vanics. We were talking about Udharana Datta Thakur, who was a Suvarna Vanic, a gold merchant. Or you're attracted, and your propensities lie in management, you know, controlling things, and, you know, defending people. Actually, Kshatriya means not just someone who likes to fight, but someone who likes to defend others. That's a Kshatriya. And or if your propensities lie in just studying philosophy, analyzing things. I mean, everybody has to understand a certain psychophysical nature, because if you try to act in a different way, just like we see sometimes people who are very, very philosophical, when they manage, it's traumatic. It's really traumatic. Anyway, so... Anyway, I'm not going to mention any more about that. Or someone who's a manager, if he tries to be really philosophical, he uses his philosophy to manipulate people. Because it's passion. Or if someone who is... of course, everyone should understand the philosophy, basically. Or if someone is a Vaishya, he'll use the philosophy, you know, he becomes philosophical to try to make money. As we've seen many times before, you have these... Bhagavad Sapta people who go out and they make a lot of, not everyone, but you know, many of them go out and they're interested in money, and you actually see in the West so many different ministers, priests and everything, they get caught with a pot of gold, so to speak, with their hands in the pot. So, or one to shoot. Anyway, so one has to understand their nature. But right now we're not talking about the varnas, we're talking about the ashrams. So the whole system of the ashrams is meant for gradual detachment. First of all, a brahmachari is trained, because a brahmachari has not yet gotten too attached to anything other than his body. Obviously a kid is attached to the body. You know, especially babies are attached, and they're attached to the satisfaction of the body. But a brahmachari is really like a simple person. That's why it says, brahmachari gurukule. Someone should go to the ashram of the spiritual master, get trained up, and the brahmachari gets to experience the bliss of just full-time service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, if he has kept too much time in the brahmachari ashram, then he may get a little crazy. Because as he's experiencing the bliss, the desires are still there. And if those desires are not fulfilled, then either he will sneak and try to fulfill the desires, or the desires will become sublimated in different ways. Sublimation means that the desire comes out in a way that it doesn't appear to be desire. It may come out as anger. Mm-hmm. It's like we know as jayatos vishyat sangosteshu vijayate sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha vijayate. When contemplating sense objects, then attachment develops. When attachment comes lust, and lust comes anger. So sometimes you see someone in the brahmacharya ashram who is extremely angry. He's snappy. That means, you know, he's been there too long. It's time to head for the, not hills, time to head for the house, for the other ashram. And, you know, also, we see this men and women, it's the same thing. And there's all, with ladies, there's this, what's called a biological clock. Like that. And so, everyone has to be in the proper ashram. So when one's young, the desires are very strong. Of course, nowadays, people try to keep these youthful desires strong for their whole lives by taking some medicine, pills. But it should be a relief. You know, instead of people getting relieved when they get older, well, it's not pushing me anymore. They're thinking, why doesn't it push me more? Let me take a pill so it'll push me more. You know, what's wrong with me? I'm 80 years old. And, you know, I'm just not interested in sex life anymore. What's wrong? Isn't it? People thinking like that, you know. And there's advertisements. I mean, when you travel on the airplane, all these advertisements for Viagra and other things like that. And, of course, the internet, too. You get all these uncalled for emails, you know. Practically my junk mail box. Fortunately, I have a junk mail filter. And every time I receive something, I can mark that particular address, as an email address, as being junk mail. And the junk mails, there's more junk mail in there than there is in mail that I actually need. And it's mostly about love. Which is interesting. So anyway, at a particular time of life, yes, it's supposed to be there. You're supposed to be really enthusiastic, and then you fall in love. It's like snorting cocaine, you know, as far as the brain scan is concerned. But you don't want that to continue. You don't want to have cocaine on your brain when you're 80 years old, because you're getting ready to leave your body. So anyway, so therefore the instruction in the Vedic literature is that at the age of 50, one doesn't have to take sannyas. In Kali Yuga, sannyas, the type of sannyas where you just like run away from home or something like that is not recommended, except if one can do it and preach Krishna consciousness, and those are exceptional cases. But generally, the preferable stage of sannyas is sometimes called kshetra sannyas, where one resides in a holy place and serves the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like Gadadhar Pandit Goswami had this particular stage of sannyas. In other words, there's a time and a place for everything in life. So there's vanaprastha. That's really what's preferable in Kali Yuga, rather than, you know, just running off into the hills and according to the forest, vanaprastha actually means to go to the forest. But for us, it means preaching Krishna consciousness. In other words, dedicating your life. So there's a time and place for everything, and the body functions differently at different times and places. I mean, I could say, you know, my age, you know, I'm not interested in the economic development or even building new temples anymore. You know, when I came here in Nugaloka, you know, as a young whippersnapper, at the ripe old age of, you know, 30-something, 33, and, you know, and then the enthusiasm was there, not for any other ashram, in any other ashram. I mean, that I gave up, but the enthusiasm was to build, to create things, to make yourself prominent, to become a guru, or sannyasi, you know, anyway. Of course, I took sannyasi to full-time serve Prabhupada, so I'm happy about that. But still, you know, when you're young, there is that sort of impetus, that motivation is there, because the passion is there in the body. What can I say? You know, I wanted to build a temple. And, you know, I'm happy I built a temple. There's a time for that. And I took out, you know, I was here early in the morning before any of you wake up. I was here putting blocks on the temple, you know, building it up. Krishna Priya may remember some of that. And, you know, everybody else, you know, I was getting angry at everybody else because they're all sitting around talking to each other while I was doing the construction, hammering, you know, and the other devotees, sometimes the devotees would come and then they would just sit around and eat prasadam for 2 hours, and then when they were buying building supplies, they would stop off at some electronics store, you know, and see all the goodies there, come back like at 10 o'clock at night. Anyways, and so I was getting frustrated, angry. Even, you know, even when we first came here, there was a devotee who didn't do, anyways, nice devotee, didn't do too much, I won't mention, he apologized.
He still keeps apologizing.
He apologized, but a nice devotee. Anyway, so I was getting frustrated. There was a lot of passion. That was the point I'm making. And then when you get older, you know, where did all the passion go? Like, you went to Chintamani and see what happened with her passion. She's in samadhi at this time of the morning, absorbed in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna internally. I wish. So, anyway, there's a time and place for everything in life. And one has to recognize that. You see, with these great kings, I was just studying the history of Prahlad Maharaj, you know, great pure devotee. He just left his kingdom as soon as his son was able to take over. You see so many examples of these great kings. Of course, I'm not leaving. Don't worry, this is not what I'm talking about. But there's a place for different activities, you know, passionate activities. I mean, deity service can be done until you leave your body. That's fine. That can always be done as long as your body is functioning. Or you can serve the deities if your body is not functioning in your mind, like that Brahmin in the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He was worshipping, offering sweet rice to the deity. He tested the sweet rice, burnt his fingers, and then Lord Narayan came and took him back to the spiritual world. So in other words, there's a time and place for everything in life. And so the Vedic system is based upon gradually becoming detached. And so the way you become detached is not simply relying on your body to become detached. That would be nice. So, okay, it's natural detachment. I'm old and can't do anything anymore, so I'm really detached. I'm just going to watch TV all day long. So that would be like the detachment one gets when you're under the influence of some drug, or in the hospital if you're unconscious, you know, they've administered some anesthesia to you. That's not detachment. Real detachment comes when one, so throughout life one has to be gradually cultivating the internal mood of attachment to Krishna and Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's service and Krishna's devotees. And this is why it's called Bhakti Yoga. I mean, the other types of yoga, unless you introduce some bhakti, you're not really becoming detached. You may engage in hatha yoga for some time and be able to, you know, stop the turning of the mind or the senses for some time, but you're not really detached. You're just coming to a stage of peacefulness for some time. Because ultimately, why are you not detached? Because there's seeds there that could fructify at any time. And you see this in the example of many, many yogis, like there's Viswamitra Muni, who was meditating and apparently very peaceful, and along comes Menaka. Another time came, Ramba came. Another time a bird just passed stool on his head and he burnt the bird to ashes, getting angry at the bird. Isn't it? You know, so he was peaceful. So that's the problem with getting so-called detached just by cultivating the mode of goodness. And we do cultivate the mode of goodness because that helps us become Krishna conscious. But it doesn't lead us to the stage of detachment. So this Hatha Yoga doesn't, Jnana Yoga doesn't, and any of the other types of yoga. I mean, to a certain degree, Karma Yoga, where you're offering everything to Krishna, may help you because you're recognizing Krishna's book, the Ram Jagatapasam Sarvalokamaheshwam Suradam Sarvabhutanam Getwa Om Shanti Richati. But ultimately, one has to learn the art of giving their heart to Krishna while they're doing their activities. In other words, not Krishna, you know, I'm doing this for you because, you know, that's my job. But Krishna, I want you to be pleased while I'm doing this. My whole life is based upon pleasing you. I want you to be happy. I'm looking for your smile. I mean, just like when Prabhupada was present, all of us were thinking, you know, we just want Prabhupada to be pleased with us. We want that letter that Prabhupada sends, my dear boys and girls, not Prabhus and Matajis. Anyway, actually, it's interesting. Prabhupada never called any of the ladies in the Hare Krishna movement Matajis. He said, ladies and gentlemen. It was interesting. When he was doing Bhagavatam class, you know, he would say, and you know, the men would chant, and he said, ladies. He didn't say, okay, Matajis. So it's interesting. So, and yeah, we were just looking for letters where Prabhupada would write and say, my dear boys and girls, I'm very satisfied with you. I'm going to come to stay at your temple because you've distributed more books than any other temple has. So that's bhakti. So in one sense, the spiritual master is there to try to, as the tax collector of bhakti, to try to, because if we please, you know, we hear this all the time, yashav prasada bhagavat prasada, yashav prasada nagati katopi. But it means that we should really be interested in pleasing, loving. You know, this is a process. Bhakti doesn't mean, it's not the same thing as puja. Because don't pronounce the word puja as puj. Puj means stool. So, puja means simply, you know, like worship. It just means worship, but it doesn't necessarily entail worship with love. But bhakti means to worship with love with the intention to please the object. Just like you can do Indra Puja or this Puja or that Puja just to, I guess, pay your debt to the demigods or to make sure they don't get angry with you. Just like we're in Fiji. And many times when the devotees join the movement, they give up doing Puja for the demigods. And then what happens if they get sick or something happens in their lives? Their parents say to them, the reason you got sick is because you gave up your puja to, you know, Ganesh, for example. That's puja. You know, just like bribery or whatever. Of course, Krishna says in the Gita, avidhi purvakam, it's not recommended. It's not the process or path that he recommends. But bhakti means to serve with devotion. And when you do that, you're cultivating throughout your whole life whatever your varna is, I mean, whatever your ashram, sorry, whatever your ashram is, if you're cultivating that throughout your life, then by the time you get a little older, then you'll be detached because you're simply desirous to please, like the mother's desire is simply to please the child. She's detached. She even becomes detached from her husband. I mean, the poor guy, he was relying on the devotion of this lady who was cleaning his clothes and pressing his clothes. And all of a sudden, the kid comes along. And he's nowhere, you know, nowhere in her activities anymore. Poor guy. You know, that's, of course, people should have children. But anyway, but the poor guy has all these expectations, you know, flowers. You know, sometimes we see, like, the lady wants to get married in the temple. She gives the guy a maha plate with the flowers on it. And she puts on special perfume or whatever, you know. You know, so the guy faints. So, but as soon as she has the kid, there's detachment. Who are you? Oh, you're just the guy who pays the bills. No, it shouldn't be. But he feels neglected. He does. I mean, I can't say that from first hand experience. I'm not in that. But I know that from talking to a lot of the men. They just feel neglected. What happened to my servant? What happened to love? So it's the same thing. When we give our heart to Krishna, then Maya will feel neglected. And when Maya feels neglected, then she's going to make some offers. You know, just like the husband. He may, in the beginning, buy some extra flowers. You know, could she become the way she used to be with me? What happened to her? Is that, you know, or buy her a car or something? Anyway. And it doesn't work because she's so much immersed in the children. Which is natural. It's a good thing. It's a good thing, and it helps the man become detached. I mean, sometimes you see, it's really interesting in Indian society that, let's say if something happens to the wife, she either dies or something like that, or there's some problem in the marriage or whatever, then the husband's parents, if they're still alive, are forcing this man to get married again. And why? Well, who's going to cook for you? Well, that's an expensive cook to have. I mean, it's cheaper to just pay someone on an hourly basis. Isn't it? Anyway, if you're getting married to someone who'll cook for you, you know, just, I'll cook for you and just give me the same money you would give to your wife, you know. You know, I'd be very happy, you know. So, anyway. So getting back to the point. So Maya, as soon as we start giving our heart to Krishna, Maya starts making all these offers. You know, here's his offer. You know, would you like to come back to me? You were so devoted to me before. This is her business. And so we just have to be like Haridas Thakur and the prostitute, Haridas Thakur and Maya Devi. We directly approach Haridas Thakur, just keep giving our heart to Krishna. Instead of giving our heart to what's described here, is all these different connections to the body. And of course, in the beginning, we understand, we dovetail these things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But ultimately, we have to see everyone as our family. That's Krishna consciousness. So, on that happy note, didn't want to speak too much about detachment. Any questions or comments? Yes?
It seems like at some point, Maya's sort of offers aren't as plentiful. Is that just as time goes on, do they become less?
No, they become more subtle. Become more subtle. You can become Jagat Guru, and you know, have so many people worshiping you. This is the final snare. Final snare, Maji, is God. You think you're God. What does that mean? It doesn't mean exactly for a devotee that a devotee is thinking, "Hey, I become God." It doesn't mean that. It means you're thinking, "I'm the controller. I'm perfect, powerful, and happy." You may not think I'm God. But for all intents and purposes, you're trying to emulate God. snare of Maya, also described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur as the final cause of the anarthas. Amongst all the causes of the anarthas, that's the final, most dangerous one. That the byproducts of bhakti, so you get all this, you know, byproducts of your spiritual advancement. People admire you. You have so many people on your Facebook page. I don't have that problem. I have disciples with more people on their Facebook page than I have one disciple, she gets 60,000 people watching her every day on Facebook Live. I'm lucky if I get 100. So, anyway, so that's danger. Maya gets more and more subtle. Not that she just goes away. It's just that she's in disguise more. That's the problem. Okay, see the deities. Yes, yeah, stealth. She's a stealth aeroplane.